hear my interview with Dr. Hilary Letwin, who is in charge of overseas the Riverview Hospital Artifact Collection, which is a collection of artifacts from the Riverview Hospital, the mental health facility in Coquitlam that operated for about 100 years in the 1900s into the early 2000s. And has launched a new database that makes it a lot easier to view and interact and engage with the collection. So we're going to hear about that, and then we'll hear a report from Danny, and then it'll be Democracy Now. So enjoy this, and I'll check in again before we go.
Hello, my name is Hilary Letwin. I'm the manager of cultural services for the city of Coquitlam.
Thanks for joining me. And today we're here to talk about the Riverview Hospital Artifact Collection and a new database that makes that collection accessible and browsable online. To start with, what is the Riverview Hospital Artifact Collection?
That's a great question. So I'll just step back for a minute and speak a little bit about my larger portfolio within the city organization. So I joined the city team in September of 2024, and part of my portfolio includes the care for our public art collection, as well as our relationship with our service providers with whom we have partnerships, our cultural partners. So that includes the Evergreen Cultural Center, the Coquitlam Public Library, Coquitlam Heritage, and Place des Arts. And the Riverview Artifacts Collection is an additional part of my portfolio as the manager of cultural services for the city. So I have learned a lot about the Riverview Artifacts Collection since I started working for the city back in September. And just to speak a little bit to the history of the collection, it actually came into city ownership in 2012. It was transferred to us from the Provincial Health Authority, and it consists of about 2,500 historical artifacts. They reflect the history of the Riverview Hospital, which is located in Coquitlam, hence the geographical proximity to the city. The collection was actually amassed and cared for by a nonprofit society for a number of years. That's the Riverview Hospital Historical Society. It was a group of very dedicated volunteers who had some sort of professional or personal connection to the hospital. And when it became clear in the 1990s that the Provincial Health Authority was probably going to be closing Riverview Hospital, this group of volunteers got together and started to create what they saw as a representative collection of artifacts from its time as a hospital. And it was opened in 1913, so that's almost a century of medical history, essentially.
What is it about the Riverview Hospital and this collection of artifacts that makes it worthy of preservation or interesting to preserve as a collection?
In the minds of our team, it's really all about offering a snapshot into the history of mental health in Western Canada. And the artifacts themselves range from furnishings to medical equipment to personal effects. And so, you know, a collection is, of course, reflective of the people who put the collection together. So it was the Historical Society who did this work and determined what should be a part of this 2,500 object collection. And it is a cross-section, a sort of time capsule, really, into the history of mental health treatment in the province.
You mentioned the collection has been managed or in the possession of the City of Coquitlam since 2012. What's new now is there's a new way to access and experience this collection. What can you tell me about the new online database?
I'll speak a little bit actually first to the work that has been done since the collection came into the care of the city in 2012. We've undertaken as a staff a series of projects that are about exploring the collection, creating inventories of the collection, and also documenting the collection through photography and other means. The collection also included quite a lot of paper material, archival material, and that material is in the care of the City of Coquitlam's archives, which is a separate entity from our department. And so the city has been working to care for this collection using sort of collection management best practice. This new database that we just essentially made live at the end of 2024 is really interesting because it's a living database. It's publicly accessible. Up until this point, we had through our website a PDF that was a fairly diligent inventory of this collection, but a database offers our public a different way to explore this collection. So if, for example, one wanted to look up all items in the collection that were the color red, then you could go into the database and you could use red as one of those search parameters, something you couldn't do, obviously, in a PDF document, regardless of how thorough it was. The other component to the database is that we're really interested in gathering further information and further stories about the items within the collection. So if, and we would encourage people to do this, if people have more information about an item in the collection, we would love them to get in touch and to tell them about what they have to share and potentially be able to add that to the database. So it's a living entity that we can continue to add to and build on as we learn more about the collection.
Really interesting, and you know, something I didn't necessarily think about when thinking about the impact of having this online and available in that way is, as you said, it being living and people being able to add on to it or add to it. Is there a process for that?
At a very basic level, we encourage them to email us and contact us through the website and through the database, and we'll start a conversation with them and identify how best to collect that information and then also to add it, dependent, of course, on the privacy considerations of their stories.
Sure. Beyond the living archive element of it, or why is it important for residents of Coquitlam or anyone else who might be interested to have this access to the collection?
We're very happy that our residents have access to this collection in different ways through the database, or possibly even if they want to come in and see particular items, that is possible too. But of course, with a database, suddenly it opens up the collection to a global audience. We anticipate, judging from previous interest in the collection and also in the items themselves, we anticipate that there will be interest not just locally in the collection, but also much more broadly. And so far, we've seen people who have personal connections to the items in the collection get in touch, but we've also heard from researchers and academics who were interested in this particular portion of BC history for different reasons. And then finally, we have members of the general public who recognize that this collection holds lots of different types of artifacts that are cross-sections and time capsules for many different industries.
We've spoken in broad terms about the collection. Just now you mentioned specific artifacts that people might be interested in. What kinds of things can people see in the collection? And then maybe beyond that, are there some specific artifacts that you think are particularly interesting or speak to something specific?
So the artifacts range, as I said, from medical equipment to furnishings, personal effects, and also kind of institutional items, crockery and uniforms and that sort of thing. For me personally, I find the personal effects most moving because those are items that relate to people's lived histories. And I think that those are extremely compelling. Coming from an art historical background as I do, I find the paintings and the other kind of craft materials that were created by people who lived at the hospital at different times in its history to be really interesting. There's in particular a painting that is a very iconic view of one of the first buildings that was built on the site that we know is a painting by one of the patients who was part of an occupational therapy program. And this painting was probably done based on a photograph that actually exists in the Royal BC Archives. So that also speaks, of course, to the way in which this collection is just one collection that touches on this place. There are, as I say, items in the City Archives that also relate to Riverview, and there are items at the Royal BC Museum and Archives that also touch on it and different records there. So our collection is just one of many collections out there that touch on this particular area. But for me, circling back, I find the paintings and the crafts that were made by people who lived there to be super interesting and quite compelling.
Could you describe the specific painting you're speaking about?
So the painting that I'm referring to is a landscape of the primary, one of the first buildings at Riverview. And it shows the building in the wider landscape with rows of daffodils. And it's painted fairly naively. It's not a complicated painting, but it is a really interesting personal connection between the artist and this place where they lived. I mean, we know that there were certain points in the hospital's history where the residents were asked or expected to make things that could then be sold to support the running of the hospital. So we've seen examples not just of paintings, but of embroidery. We also know that there was a working farm on the property where butter was sold from it and cheese was sold from it. So it speaks to the larger ecosystem of the hospital and how it was managed over its almost century of operations.
And so obviously, as you've mentioned, one thing we can learn from these artifacts is, well, there's sort of a portrayal of the history of mental health care in the province. Is there anything else that you hope people might be able to take away from this collection, from viewing the collection?
One of the more unique and perhaps difficult parts of this collection, which arguably is sensitive in nature, is that the collection holds 11 different electrotherapy machines, and these machines date from different periods. They're not just, you know, the same example of the same machine from the same time period. So I think that from a researcher's perspective, that's a really interesting snapshot of different medical therapies that were being employed. But again, I think that for most people, it's less about the kind of academic side of things and more about the lived histories that are represented by these objects that people can learn from and take interest in.
There's another part of this that I saw mentioned was the artifact loan program.
So, like I said, we've put the database out there for people to be able to access the objects. We're looking for people to come back and tell us more, possibly about the objects in the collection. But we're also interested in sharing these objects. We have cared for this collection over the last 12 years, and we're very hopeful that institutions, museums, and other sort of institutions will be interested in putting together exhibitions that will borrow material from this collection. And so we're piloting some loan projects this year and are happy to consider any other requests that might come in for institutions to borrow these objects for their own exhibition purposes.
Do you have hopes for what this collection might be able to accomplish or for what might come from it?
At the minute, we are excited to offer people a deeper opportunity to explore the collection more through the database and are looking to gather stories related to the objects in the collection.
Well, thanks for taking the time to sit down and chat with me today.
Thanks, Jesse. It's been a pleasure to speak with you.
You're listening to CJSF 90.1 FM, your alternative to mainstream media. Broadcasting from Simon Fraser University at Burnaby Mountain, British Columbia.
Reporting from Burnaby, BC, this is Danny Nezvedarani, your community journalist for CJSF 90.1 FM, Burnaby. La Dignidad Migrante Society is a non-profit organization based in Surrey, BC, run entirely by temporary foreign workers from countries all over the world. The goal of the organization is to provide an organizing voice for temporary foreign workers, particularly those in the agricultural sector, to help prevent abuse, exploitation, racism, and discrimination in the workplace. On January 17, 2025, an art exhibition titled Invisibles and Disposables, Temporary Foreign Workers, Life and Rituals by La Dignidad Migrante Society, featuring artwork by Luz Rosas and Carlos Colleen, premiered at Place d'Art in Coquitlam, BC. As stated on the event page, this exhibition depicts the life and experiences of temporary foreign workers, mainly from Mexico, during their time in British Columbia, using both photographs and cardboard produce boxes with text. Invisibles and Disposables seeks to share workers' stories with Canadians, using art to make visible essential workers in our communities while finding new ways to collaborate and support them. CJSF attended the exhibition's opening reception to meet with the two artists responsible for the exhibition, Luz Rosas and Carlos Conlin, who agreed to sit down for an interview with CJSF to discuss the goals and overall purpose of their exhibition, as well as the response from some of the temporary foreign workers whose photographs were used in the exhibition. Please take a listen.
So at some point we try through Dignidad Migrante to open new possibilities that people can be engaged about all these situations. And arts as a tool helps a lot. So it's also trying to move these sometimes in that point of view as a just 100% political perspective. And that's why sometimes I believe that also people reject that idea of like, oh, I can get involved in what happened with the workers. But at some point when you start finding other visibilities that you can support with, I think it's also important that exhibitions like this happen. And it happens with other communities in Canada, South Asians or Chinese, Japanese, but with Latin American workers is quite minimum. So I think it's a good also opportunity to open that window as well.
Another thing that really struck me with the exhibition too is that it wasn't just photographs. There was also those cardboard boxes that had text that were sort of in between. How did you decide, I guess, the way in which to go about that? That was something that I was curious about.
Well, it's a combination of two main things. One is I believe that Luz has one of the biggest archives about the migrant workers, not just in BC, but also in Canada. And every time that we talk, I tell her that, because I'm really proud that she was able to photograph them and being involved in that fashion, let's say. And it was useless for me as an artist too, just to do more photographs. There's no point. Like, you just like cop everything with images, and sometimes also you can lose track of what you really want to represent. So if we have this big visual position, I think for me, in talking about that part of the project with the boxes, is like bring information as well, right? So eventually you can make that contrast between this like leisure time that Luz tried to represent, comparing to, well, I mean, and also they suffer this. And I think it's a good counterposition. So the idea of the boxes is, the title is Below the Fruit. So it's more like imagining that process that they work 14, 15 hours a day, just like packing everything, put it in boxes, you know, like they deliver it to farmers markets or supermarkets. And then when people pick them up, automatically it's all the labor there, right, that we don't see. Mm-hmm. So eventually it's more that I was thinking about that process, even for myself or even for us, when, you know, you have access to all these situations and you don't know exactly what happened behind.
Yeah. And I think it adds a lot too, because, you know, I guess this was my interpretation of it when I saw it, but, you know, in a lot of the photos that are presented, a lot of the, you know, people and the families that are being photographed, they're smiling, they look happy. And I think what the boxes sort of represented was they're still familial, they're still happy, they're still striving despite this all, and there needs to be more done so that they can,
yes, you got it right,
yeah, you know, it exists in a way that's equitable and fair for everyone.
Because just like to jump in fast, when you try to make also like too complicated artwork, like too conceptual, also you lose track of communication. And in this case, because I believe it's a strong political side, like when you try to be too conceptual and too poetic, also you lose that kind of sense. And I think that's why the show, personally speaking, works perfectly, because we were able to make that balance right, as you mentioned. You're right. Yep.
Just from, you know, this exhibition has been going on since January 17th now, since last Friday. What was the response like at the opening night, and what has it been so far?
Well, some of them there were impressed about what they told me, right? It's about the the look in the eyes of the people in the portraits, the way that they look, because it's like they're looking at you. And so other ones, they were puzzled to see the different edges that are there for the people in the portraits. Some people was very excited with one particular picture about the bingo game, where everybody saw like having so much fun together, right? Which sometimes they can have a very stressful. Well, it's just more like they live in isolation, even though they live together, because sometimes the conditions that they live into may be too crowded, right? To have some kind of they're living together. They're sharing probably one bedroom. They're sharing. If they're lucky, maybe they have more like three refrigerators for all of them. So they cook for themselves. Some of them have to cook. Some they don't know. Everything is far away, right? Like everything is far away to go to the store. They depend on transportation provide, or some of them, I guess, they want to be longer. They know how to get a taxi altogether and maybe go. Everything is fast, right? Send money home. So when they manage to get to these points of where they can gather together and do something for themselves, and at the same time engage in a game activity, which, by the way, the game of the bingo too has information about the rights. So it's not just they learn to words, right? Like what is the contract, the permit. So it's a fun game, but at the same time it's a learning game. And I guess that at the same time too, when they have these gatherings, it really is like a way of psychologically be more peaceful and forget about whatever is around and speaking freely in your language and joking in your language. I think that's very important.
Mm-hmm. You said that the version of bingo they're playing has specific details about workers' rights.
Yes.
That's so interesting.
Or the radio, or words that they that they use, like the la farma, right? Which is they call the farm.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So yeah, and it has who's the el patrón, like the owner, or the foreman. So in English and Spanish, so they can relate, and they can learn too.
Mm-hmm. Are you in contact with any of the people that are photographed as part of the exhibition? Have they said anything about the work that's been done?
Well, we have a WhatsApp with most of many of the women and the men too, and they're waiting for the link to the exhibition, which is going to be on the 24th of February. It's going to be available through the places, our gallery, where this is in Port Coquitlam. And so it's going to be online, that they can have a virtual tour. So I guess all of them, it's hard for them to come to galleries, right? Because first of all, right now is the winter time, so most of them, they're not here. And the ones are here, some might be working in construction, but their times for working is just not, they don't check with the galleries, right? So I think they're very excited to see. They're waiting for that link to see it. Yeah, some of them, they know they're in the exhibition, and they're just very excited to see it.
Yeah, I think the link will be January, like next.
Yeah, the 24th.
Yeah,
next Friday.
January, yes.
Next Friday, yeah.
And also, I think something important that Lou says is that's one of the problems with arts, or what we understand about the art world. Right, that usually is very pretentious, and sometimes we create, or some people in the cultural realm, like create this kind of like a snobby and bourgeoisie like approach about arts. And that's why also, like, I believe it's not, I'm not, I hope I say it properly again, but I always believe that these exhibitions are not specifically for the workers, because they know all these situations, right? They're always welcome to come and see it and engage also in that cultural, artistic perspective. But it's also, they know and they understand sometimes when we talk in Dignidad or with them in the events, it's like, at the end it's like, you need to drag the community, right? Or what we understand about this multicultural Canadian community to see, like, I mean, you know that these things happen, but you don't connect too much, right? So that's why that example with the bingo game, people look at it and it's like, it's strong because, I believe, because they're laughing and they're having fun. Sometimes even for you, not for you, but like for the community, it's hard to understand, like, if they suffer a lot, why they have also these things. And just to conclude, I believe, strongly believe, that the idea of the exhibitions is also destroy that part of porn misery that sometimes we expect to see in these kind of situations, right? Mm-hmm. Through political lens or the war lens, like, you always expect that kind of like dramatization of everything. And these kind of things also make up a different impact on you, and you start to more like connected in a different way. Or spread the voice, you know, like, I don't expect that people eventually the next morning go to the farms and it's like, yeah, we want rides for our peers, and, you know, because that's utopic in some ways. But for me also, the vision of these kind of situations is that, let's say you're gathering now that you came to the exhibition, and then when these kind of topics just like pops up in your conversation, then eventually you can add something. You know, like, oh, I went to this exhibition in Place de Arts where we saw these photographs about Dignidad Migrante, or do you know that also all these people unfortunately suffer discrimination, racism, by the same government that we believe is a liberal, democratic, progressive perspective? It's like, it's all the same. At the end, it's politics behind. But when you brought it to your table and start having those conversations, I think the job is done in some ways.
Once again, you were just listening to our conversation with Luz Rosas and Carlos Colleen, the exhibiting artists for Invisible and Disposables, Temporary Foreign Workers, Life and Rituals. You can find their exhibition at Place des Arts in Coquitlam, BC. You can also learn more about the exhibition on the Place des Arts website, which is at placedesarts.ca. You can also learn more about La Dignidad Migrante Society, as well as the various ways to support the organization, through their website, dignidadmigrantesociety.org. Once again, this has been Danny Nesvedarani, your community journalist for CJSF 90.1 FM, Burnaby. This segment would not be possible without the continued support of the Community Radio Fund of Canada's Local Journalism Initiative. You can also listen to this piece on frequencynews.ca.
I remember back, way back when I fell in love with this rap thing. Before the years making beats, working at Cascade. Before the rap game of jams and my band played. Late night, bars at bars, crafting a fan base. I had a fan's face first and my classmates asked when they passed me. What my pen and pad say? I'm like a rap great in whack ways. Lacking in class to bad grades. Lacking, but I had faith. They'd even slap my notebooks on bad days. But I knew eventually that one day the laughs fade. I still fell at a fast rate. For the craft and the catalog of rap greats and the vast taste of whatever mom and dad played. Classic mixtapes from my oldest fam, Grace. Backpack of CDs, I racked the mad plays till I stopped acting and became an act on that stage. Teens that I make a name. I always tried to learn from replaying my favorite tapes. Cause when I float, I mean, go achieve my favorite state. I think it's safe to say that I never left a wasted page. Not a game, now the game is my favorite place. Now when I play, I don't play, and no play is safe. But now I'm grateful, at least that I can save a play. Was always about the page first, way before the paper chase. But there are days when I derail, felt I failed the maze. Now I learn from who's ahead and have a trail to blaze. When we make mistakes, remember how to take the blame. This love is for life, see I'm in it till my fateful day. What do I do with this craft can't stay the same. What are the tools that I lack? What is taking place in the world? What do I say when I take the stage? Less about a name or the changes that we make today. Though we grow and don't know if the coast is clear. We're just slow getting older, we're facing fears. There are times we don't know where to go from here. There's nothing left to do but grow. Gardens grow different times all through the years. Heart and soul learn to know what is holding near. As above, so below, do what makes you feel. Got nothing left to do but grow. How about we laugh and we dance?